legends, and welcome to Unbeatable You, where we connect, thrive, and conquer. I'm your host, Brett Robbo, and I'm super grateful for your valuable time. So let's just dive straight in. Keep thriving and enjoy. Does it zap you every time you do a step? Every time you don't do a step,
I mean. Just celebrates me. Gives me a little,
little dopamine hit. Oh, celebration. That's the good part of those watches.
Yeah, that's what I like it. Okay.
Good to roll?
Yeah, ready to rock.
Amber Hawken, my sister from another mister, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you so much. It's an honour.
This is your fourth time.
What?
Fourth time on.
Oh, how fun.
First time since the name change.
Mm.
But your first time was episode 69.
I remember, actually.
You requested that. Back in 2018. Then I had you on almost exactly a year later, 2019.
Mm-hmm.
Almost a year after that, 2020. And so now it's been 3 years.
Wow.
And five years since the first one.
How amazing. That's awesome.
Welcome back. So because it's been so long since the first and since the last one even, there will be a lot of people listening to this that don't know who you are. Mm-hmm. So who is Amber Hawken?
I have to do my own intro,
what do you do?
Lots changed around
here. What's your favourite colour?
thank you so much. I would introduce myself by first proudly saying that I'm a mother of my beautiful son, Anakin, partner of Ryan Pope, my gorgeous man. I work in the realms of holistic behavioural therapy. I've got a list of different qualifications that are boring to read out. So beyond that, I am pretty dedicated to being as honest and truthful as I can be with myself and with the world, and being a human being and getting the most out of that experience and supporting people to heal at a deep core level and feel free and alive in themselves and life. I guess that's a bit of a summary. I don't know.
I was going to ask you then, what do you do? So you mentioned healing. Do you consider yourself as a healer? Because I know over the years we've done a lot of work together, and years ago when we were doing some stuff and you weren't connected to the word coach.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a coach. Yeah. It was easy for me to say, but you were not connected to that. What do you say that you are?
I still don't.
From a professional perspective.
Yeah, okay. Holistic behavioural therapist. I guess it's the easy to consume. I don't really think about it that much, to be perfectly honest, and I still wouldn't. I veer away from saying I am a healer because I mean, we're all self-healers, but I think it puts, this is just my opinion, if you move towards that title, I think it puts you in the position of the person doing something for the other. So if you're working with someone, you're the healer and they're the person receiving the healing, whereas I actually think that that is an incorrect position. I think that is – I just don't think it's the what's actually happening. Yeah, I think you can facilitate. I think you can be there. I think you can hold space. I think you can support activation. But I think it's the individual doing the healing. We're supporting the removal, or we're supporting the space, but – not us.
The removal of what?
Interference.
Interference with what?
Our homeostasis on a mental, emotional, physical, spiritual level.
Explain that.
If you think about it in terms of what you do as a coach, you are excellent at identifying mental distortions. And mental distortions interfere and create emotional distortions. And emotional distortions project through our perspective onto the world and create distortion with how we view ourselves and how we view the world. And those distortions drive our actions. And our actions create, you know, our life and our micro habits. So if you do that on a spiritual level, if you don't have any connection to anything outside of yourself that's bigger than yourself, then that's a huge distortion. And there will be a selfishness about that, perhaps a helplessness about that, perhaps a lack of sense of purpose about that, which is a distortion. So if you think about a physical distortion, it could be removal of toxins or supporting someone to guide the removal. You could, you know, guiding people to remove unfiltered water, but to add in filtered water. For chiropractors, they are, depending on what type of chiropractor they are, if they're doing manual or non-manual adjustments, they're supporting the spine to get back into alignment, to remove interference for the flow of, the information to go through our spinal cord to get to the right parts of the body and help everything function. So it's all about, in my opinion, removing interference so that things can happen how they're meant to.
You work with people one-on-one. Mm-hmm. You run workshops and retreats. Mm-hmm. What are some of the most common challenges that people come to you with? Like, how do they manifest from how they would present with them? Mm. And then what are some of the most common causative factors, or where are they coming from?
We might have to go more specific, because I work usually exclusively with the men on men's retreat and the women on and the women's retreat, and then my one-on-ones are, they're usually at a different level. They've gone through one of them.
So let's go with then.
Okay, cool.
Maybe let's go. Let's start with women and the first time that they've come to see you. So whether it's the retreat or they've got to do that kind of work before they can work with you one-on-one. Is that correct? So then the first time, what is it that you see, or even if they're not working with you in particular, but you might be running a workshop and you're exposed to countless women and men, mm-hmm. what are the most common challenges that women face? Like, how do they manifest in their lives? And then where do you see it from your lens, not the lens of the world, but from your expertise, your lens, that you see most of them coming from?
Thank you. It's a beautiful question. So from my experience, what I see is women reach a point where they can no longer repress themselves anymore. So they can no longer stand the feeling or the experience of no longer expressing what they feel, what they want, what they need, boundaries, desires. And that shows up in so many different ways, usually exhaustion, usually a hyper independence or a helplessness, like either end of the scale of that, so driven by the same thing. This sense of maybe the martyr has been playing out for a really long time. So the aspect of us that says, oh, I can't rest until, or when I do that, or when this happens, then I can rest. And this constant, you know, which gives a little dopamine hit. So it fuels and perpetuates itself, which is just an aspect of the victim, which wants to be held and saved and soft and tender and relax into that softness. But our culture has said, no, if you move out of these, lines or this, this is the measurement of what is normal for expression of hormones or emotion or anger or physical expression or how you look or what you believe. Like, let's fit in this lane, fit in this, you know, don't go beyond this framework. If you do, then we've got, you know, some tablets for that, or you know, we've got a solution for that. We can fix you. We can help you. And so we've culturally, women have tried to live a linear life, which is, you know, men have 24-hour hormonal cycles. Women, I will not have this hormonal print, this hormonal experience in this moment for another year from now. You'll have this tomorrow, exact same time. And the world has been, our culture in the West has been built for men's cycles and not women's. And so we have predominantly tried to do our best to fit into that mentally, emotionally, vocationally, in any way that we can. There's also a disrespect and a lack of reverence for women transitioning from maiden to mother. And that doesn't mean that you actually just bear a child. It means that you are moving beyond that age of 25 into, you know, those years before you go into Marga and Crone, which is your bleed stops and your menstruation stops. And there's a lack of reverence, understanding and respect for that transition. So you'll find a lot of women still try to be the maiden, like this young, perfect looking, perfect body, perfect boobs, perfect life, having everything together all at once, emotionally, mentally, vocationally, and also trying to live in a linear way, and also trying to be successful and live up to and be as good as men because I should be accepted like that. So there's this complete disconnect from the nature of the woman's physical evolution, emotional evolution, spiritual evolution, and that suppression, oppression, and then repression. Repression is me to myself, from the suppression that we have allowed or have been born into, turns into resentment, bitter, anger, more martyrdom, more victim consciousness, which we just try to work over or make ourselves better or try and make our bodies better or back to how they were. And women get to a point whether or not they've realized any of this, but they're like, this is fucked. I don't feel good. It doesn't feel good anymore. I'm either drained or I'm angry or I'm done. There's a doneness. There's a resignation of I no longer want to keep doing what I'm doing in a way. They might not be 100% there. They also might be thriving in a sense, but feeling like it shouldn't be this hard. Like there's something, they're thriving in different areas, usually in their life, in their business or their work life. There's usually a thriving because that culture has pushed us in a way. Well, a lot of women have wanted to stand strong and say, no, I can be equal to, but then ignored their cycle, cyclical nature. And so they're accelerating in different areas but feeling deeply unfulfilled or empty or exhausted, and then there's that resentment that they're maybe blaming themselves for and unsure of, like, well, just there's something like that doesn't feel right, and they want to, they're like, I'm done being hyper independent in this, like I know I can do it, but I just need that gap bridged to go deeper, to go what's underneath this, what's actually happening.
Everything that you've talked about there that you work on, that you support women to move through, how much of that have you experienced as
all
a woman?
Of it.
All of it.
All of it, yeah, 100%. Most intimately and intensely in the last 12 months.
Since becoming a mother.
Yes. Yeah. The rage. The anger. It's there. And I would have just not I would have judged it before. I didn't understand it until I'm in it. Mm. And it's profoundly humbling and mind-blowing, and I noticed the internalized misogyny, which is like the distaste or the judgment or dislike of women that I honestly, if you'd said that to me before I was a mother, I would have thought you're joking. You, it's something you must experience.
What was that? Sorry, I missed that. The dislike.
Internalized misogyny that a lot of women hold. So a dislike for other women.
Ah, okay.
Or a
right.
Disrespect, a lack of reverence from women for women is huge.
Gotcha.
It's if not worse than, you know, the masculine aspect of our culture, the male aspect.
I was going to ask you a bit later, but while we're on that, how life and how your perspectives have changed since becoming a mother?
Everything.
I guess the practicality of life is a simple thing, but how is there any beliefs or perspectives, like you said then, that previously would have judged some of those reactions or emotions that have come through?
So much. The biggest one is probably around that if we can support mothers, and I mean mentally, emotionally, physically, through great community and support, the children are raised by women who aren't repressing themselves. They are loved. The women are able to give, the mothers are able to give so much more. They're not trying to push over extreme exhaustion, which is, you know, you can't avoid. It's a rite of passage in its own way. I'm not saying to avoid that, but in the sense that when they're done, that they can call, you know, who would have been the aunt or the sister or the mother or the grandmother for support. They don't end up completely addicted to coffee or stimulation or needing to put their kids in front of stimulation or do quick fix meals all the time, or there's this culture of separating the dyad of the two, the mother and child or the mother and the children, that are meant to be together for many years in order to create healthy, nourished relational patterns in the children. And so I see a lot of the work that I do is reversing this. And so when we can center our society around supporting mothers at that stage, it prevents so much of this, so much of it. And, you know, the father comes into that too as well, the supporting the father, and like that's a whole different conversation, but of course they're included.
Knowing what you know, pre and now, post, now that you're a mother, before you had Anakin, did you think that you would be working more by now and spending less time with your 1-year-old, but just being able to go navigate yourself back to work, because some of the conversations I've had with you have just been, I can't believe how much I just want to be with him. Mm. And I didn't know that it was going to be like this. And there's the obvious, of course you would, but then the options are, and setting up your life to go, actually, like, because of that patterning, what you've just said, that this is my right. Mm. And it's kind of like what I believe in, that I need to be spending this so much more time with my son.
Yeah. Those first 6 years, the first three, they're just so vital. And yeah, I can't remember exactly when I thought, but if I look back, I believe that I would have believed I would be somehow working full time again. I don't know what that looked like, but I just, the reason that I can look back and think that is because I remember being focused on, say, maybe taking 6 months really low key or 12 months low key, but then it would da-da-da-da-da. And I'm like, no, I'm just going to work out how to keep going like this.
For those reasons, it's beautiful. So shifting gears again, then back to the same question around the women. Uh-huh. So if we focus on the men now, and I've been lucky enough and super grateful and honoured to support you on your men's alchemy retreat. So I've seen this play out in action from the way that you and your partner Ryan, good mate of mine, run the show and get the amazing, like, life-changing results. But what are some of the most common challenges that the guys present with in these environments, and where do you see those mostly stemming from? Like, is it past experiences, past trauma? Is it environmental aspects?
It's a little bit of everything. Such a big question. Thank you for asking it.
And the reason I asked too is because I know that a lot of people listening, if you speak to it, they might not have been aware of it before, but when you speak to it and they're like, oh, fuck, that's me.
Yeah.
Oh, right, there is something that I can do beyond numbing or the basics.
Yeah. To answer the question, what's the most common thing that they're coming for?
Yeah, what are some of the most common things that they're coming for?
It's a similar of, I'm done doing where I'm at. Like, I don't want to. It's life's usually thrown them an opportunity, or in a sense an ultimatum. So it could be health ultimatum, relationship ultimatum, work. I can no longer go on this working like this anymore and feeling this unfulfilled, even though I have all of these accolades and this money and all of these things, there's something going on. Or an ultimatum of, I have all of this potential, I have all of these gifts I want to give, and I keep sabotaging, or I keep, you know, capping myself. So it's in themselves, they are, okay, I've got to do something. And so it's a fork in the road for them to make a decision. I keep going down this path, or I make transition into a different one now. And it could be any number of, maybe a reactivation of an old addiction coming through that is like, okay, or, you know, their wife leaving them, or their husband leaving them, or their relationship breaking down. It could be like their job collapsing and them realizing their whole sense of self was rooted in, you know, money or success or whatever that was. It could be becoming a father and suddenly all of your stuff comes through and you're like, whoa, I didn't know this was still here. Or it could be wanting to move to that next depth of being able to give your gifts in this world and wondering where the cap is that you're putting on yourself. There's so much more, but that's the tip of the iceberg.
And so they might, what are some of the things that present with the guys with that? Like, you know, is it depression? Is it anxiety? Is it anger issues?
Mm-hmm.
Is it overwhelm?
Numbness is a big one. Not feeling necessarily a lot and thinking that there's something wrong with that, but knowing that there is, they might be buried in work. A lot of focus on working to move away from a sense of inadequacy, or trying to reach the idea that they have in their head of what it is to be a successful man or a good enough man or a good enough father. Generally driven from an unconscious place to meet the expectations of the father they always sought approval from, or the mother they sought love from. And that is, it doesn't matter who you are, that's every single human. Every single human. Some of us have moved through that, but there will be, if you don't have the mum or the dad, you'll have the culture. You know, that culture's expectations, and we cannot escape it. So there's a certain level of humility required to say, okay, it is impacting me. Because a lot of people, there are many men who want to be above that. And sorry, no one is above it. We're born into it and it's our work to do.
Why do we want to be above it?
Because why, Robbo? And I'm to men, I would love you to inquire what would it mean if I wasn't above that? What would it mean about me? And generally it's like, well, I'm like everyone else. I'm average, or I'm below that, or I'm less than, and it's, I'm not good enough.
Mm.
It's a sense of shame or a sense of failure in some way, shape or form that doesn't want to be touched.
Mm. Yeah, that shame word is one. That's kind of what I was thinking would be beneath that a lot, because that's what I find working a lot with men as well, and doing a deep dive into that and understanding the guilt leading to the shame, leading to the toxic shame. And actually just before this recording, had a call with a group, and it was the first time with this group and one guy opening up about it, and it's never spoken to it before. And I even asked him, you know, have you spoken about that before? No way. I've been embarrassed. So that deep seated shame, guilt, embarrassment for the life that we are creating, or in the story in our mind that we're not creating, and therefore the drive, and then the numbingness to drive even harder. Because when you said numbing, then I was thinking like addictions. Is it numbing with alcohol or substances? But I guess also, and even if you're not using that, numbingness can be just to overwork so you don't feel that shame, so you don't feel that disappointment or embarrassment.
It's anything that's out of balance that can move you away from an uncomfortable emotion. It could be coffee. It could be your exercise. It could be dating apps. It could be the conversation you're having in your head with yourself. It's also a way to move away from feeling. It's not the classic addictions that we think. And you might, if you're someone listening to this and thinking, well, I don't do any of those, I don't have addiction. I think there's very few of us who aren't impacted by our devices and our addiction to our devices or our stimulants. It's there. And I think unless we are immersed in nature and consciously taking time to connect back into nature and remove ourselves from the overstimulation, there is a sense of numbness that's happening because we're overstimulated, so we're desensitized. I wrote about it last week, how I'm experiencing that going back to work 15 to 20 hours a week, and the openness and the sensitivity that I felt when I wasn't working and postpartum, which at first was a lot, is suddenly going away. And I went, whoa. And I have a pretty connected life.
Mm.
And so it's environmental, it's cultural, and it's our awareness and our choice that can change it.
I was listening to, just a few days ago, I was at a live workshop listening to behavioral scientists and neuroscientists talk about this. It's what we already know, but just put in a bit of a context. They don't believe that our genes have changed in 40,000 years.
Mm.
And the brain hasn't evolved that much. Mm. Like, it definitely has a little bit, but not much. And if you look at what that genome and that brain was designed for in the wilderness, the hunting, the gathering, all of that hunting is a new word, but hunting and gathering, and that lifestyle, and then you go and put all of this technology and environmental toxins and fast food, all of the social media, everything around that genome and that brain, which is you and I and everyone else listening, and then you go, oh, yeah, you should be able to survive and thrive. Mm. It's a load of shit.
Mm-hmm.
So what you said there about that disconnection from all of that and getting back into nature, getting back to the roots of how we are actually designed as human beings and those kind of foundations is vitally important. The expectation that if people are struggling and they can just take a pill and then continue to be surrounded by environmental toxins, all of the stuff we just talked about, and heaps of shit that you don't see and you'll never hear about that's actually impacting how you vibrate at a cellular level, all of that kind of stuff, and the surface level stuff that we know we're exposed to, the simplicity of take a pill or take some medication or just have a bit of a rest and you'll be okay, it's not enough because of the world that we live in. So unless we completely move out into nature and separate ourselves from that, which some people do, and credit to them if they're loving life.
Yeah.
So how much of that is a part of the work that you do? And I know the answer to that, but I want you to speak into it, because my experience in the Alchemy Retreat as a co-facilitator when I got there was, oh shit, I needed this. This is for me to experience as well. So how is it, without giving away too much of the secret sauce, that you set it up to get the transformation that you get?
It's a huge setup and it's a beautiful process. And thank you. I don't mind. I don't think there's any secret sauce. Anyone could do the framework and it would be their own.
I guess it's more speaking to the elements too. Yeah. So like how you're using the elements to,
yeah.
And then and what you're using them for, what's yeah. the transformation that's happening through the elements?
Thank you. Such a beautiful question. So what we do begin with is a detox, a process of a cleanse. And that's, I think, really important to state because if you go into an environment like alchemy, when you go straight out of your current environment into the alchemy environment, the detox can happen there. It can almost be a shock. Like it's a lot for the system to go into a nourishing, kind, low stimulation at times. There's plenty of opportunity for stimulation and a healthy activation of challenge, but it's overwhelming. Because it's the opposite, and there is a sense of safety or a sense of familiarity in the busyness in the speed. So, there's a cleanse process for a couple of weeks beforehand where you strip out toxins out of your diet, you remove any substance of addiction. Which before there's an application process which you know and you opt into that. We don't suddenly go, okay, take your addiction. You've got to choose. You know, you're willing to be at that place. Reduction of a device, increase of movement, increase of coherent breathing or efficient breathing, and some different kinds of breath work to activate, stimulate a healthy, energetic stimulation so that it's almost like a healthy way to get that hit of energy. Removal of coffee, which everyone flips out about, which is great. Well, I can give up anything but not my coffee, which I raise my hand, it's hard. I find it difficult too. And
I'll second that.
And especially spirit. Yeah. I'm not making excuses. But it's beautiful because what you get to see is what your energy looks and actually feels like currently based on how you're treating it or not treating it. And it's usually a hard, humbling lesson for us all. And we do some masterclasses to prep and prime to have a look at some of the things and the ways in which you might respond in this environment and to like be prepared for it all so that we can dive straight in. And so the elements on retreat we use, think of it, all of the elements, fire, earth, water, wind, space, air. And we always hold alchemy on land that we work on Bundjalung country currently, which is the indigenous name for the country that we're working on in Bundjalung country. And we're always working with people who take care of the land that they're working on because the land has a vibration. It has a spirit, has a voice if you learn to listen. And so the land is a really beautiful place to work on. Earth, think grounding, think mountains. So there's rolling hills and there's mountains. There's water holes around. We work with water in the sense of both immersing ourselves, like getting in water, but the element of water is emotion, right? And then you think of fire. A lot of men's fire is stoked by stimulation, not an inner discipline or the discipline that a lot of men have is from a place of driving themselves because they don't feel good enough or they're trying to reach that. So the fire is actually, they're putting anything and everything they can to keep the flame alive, even at the cost of the toxins that are burning. If they're using, you know, cardboard boxes with like paint and, you know, they're burning usually the candle at both ends of the stick, and that fire is being stoked by always an external source, not internal source. We also work with the element of fire. Adam Kavanagh is one of our incredible facilitators and he helps the men build fire, and there's beautiful process and ceremony around that. Air is expression, it's heart, it's lungs. So, you know, we do some breath work journeys. We work, and that works with grief, it works with the heart, it works with opening, it works with clearing, it works with like journeying. Space, we work with integration, we work with meditation practices and opening and sound, noble silence, so spaciousness where you get to really see your thoughts, and we create space within you, so help you empty out of all of that thought and energy and over like kind of the backed up pipes, so to speak, and you can connect to, you can call it whatever, God, spirit, universe, source, whatever you want to call it, and let that come through and flow through. So there's this combination of this fullness that's charge, you're like a recharge, but there's a freedom. So there's that beautiful integrated balance of like feeling really full, but also feeling incredibly free from burden, from, well, that's a different ball game, but free. a sense of freedom and spaciousness within yourself.
And the breath.
And the breath.
You mentioned it in the detox part, but using the breath in the retreat part of it is super powerful. And you did say men there because we were talking about men, but it's the same elements and the same setup with the women's retreats that you run.
Correct.
If you could choose one way to work with humans, there's not a time limit on it, but one way, what would you choose based on what you've done and what you've been exposed to as well as a student of life and having done and having mentors and coaches and or healers that you've invested into over time?
Which one of those aspects?
Yeah, and I don't mean one element, but like would it be I can only run retreats, I can only do one-on-one work, I can only do group facilitation online, which means I can touch millions of people at the same time.
I'd do these retreats. I would. And I wouldn't make them bigger. I think the intimacy is important. We only hold 22 or 24 with the women, 22 men. If anything, I'd make them smaller to do more advanced work, but I'd stay in group. There's something really important about community and group and connection because you still get your own time on retreat and you can still have that aspect of one-on-one with a facilitator that we do. And we do, that's why we run it in the way that we run it. So there's still the group's small enough and intimate enough to have contact with probably one-on-one with almost every facilitator during it at some point. But being seen, being acknowledged, being held, feeling that sense of belonging, which innately we thrive when we have that sense inside of us as a human being, like I belong here. I belong here. Like I belong here on this earth. I belong in my life. I belong with these men or with these women. I belong in this group. I belong as a man or I belong in this friendship or in this relationship. Feel like the integrity and the strength and the dignity a human being has when they realize I belong here is reversing, I think, a lot of the damage that we have done since our ancestors used to live in those beautiful ways.
Well, I guess a sense of belonging is kind of the opposite of that shame spiral that we were speaking about before, because even when you say belonging and that you're drawing me in, I'm leaning, I want to belong. I want that sense, that feeling. So I guess for a lot of people, men and women listening would be not even realizing that, oh shit, that's actually something that, you know, that I'm missing. That could actually be part of what will support me through these challenges.
Well, back to what we were saying about what's the one thing that I think is important to change, we've created these little tiny nuclear families that are, they have a mum and a dad. Some people might have grandparents helping them, which is amazing. Some people might even have siblings and grandparents. Amazing. A lot of people don't. They're far away from their family. They're a mum and a dad doing their best to cover the costs. Usually because of the living costs, the mum and the dad have to go back to work. They put the kids in daycare and then they're feeling this sense of separation that shouldn't be there. And it is felt. You talk to anyone deep down, they can say, yeah, it's good that they socialize and all of that, but there's something in them that's like being together is the way it should be, is the way it was meant to be. And it's a huge fucking privilege if you can. And that's sad. And that's why I think that sense of belonging is so healing and so cathartic. And it just is the way it is right now. And we're doing the best that we can as a culture to reverse that. But I think people need to hear that it's not meant to be that way. So that part of you that feels like it's wrong, you're spot on. You're spot on.
And that speaks to one element of life. It goes back to what I was saying there before too, of so many of those elements of life where if you're sensing it just doesn't feel right, that I'm grinding, that I'm hustling, trying to do all of this stuff, or that I'm feeling disconnected or whatever it might be, that trust that feeling. And that's usually a clear indicator of some changes that not can be made but must be made if they're impacting who we truly are and what we truly desire and deserve. Yep. So shifting gears just a little bit, we've spoken men and women separately and you don't need a man and a woman to create a relationship, but it's often, it's been my experience mostly, the relationships is what I'm shifting into. What do you find is the most common challenges or causes of conflict in relationships with the work that you do? And can you speak to some processes or techniques that you find that is missing in relationships that can be something that people can draw on?
Yeah.
I know it's a loaded question. I know it goes deep.
Okay, good.
We'll do a part. This is your fourth round. We can do 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 for the depth of this.
Let me sit with it for a second. The biggest cause of conflict, yeah?
Not necessarily the biggest, but what are some common challenges or common causes of conflict that people watching this are probably going to be like, oh, yep, that's showing up in my relationship?
The biggest one that I've seen in my work and in the world with human beings is that due to a lack of genuine, thriving, honest, humble connection with ourself first, that relationship with ourself and our earth, and I mean it, and healthy relationships with our parents, whether they're here or not, that we have worked with the distortions in our own mind and heart around, that then create distortions which we project onto our partners, mostly unknowingly and unconsciously, that cause hurt, where there is a lack of awareness of what is mine, what is theirs, what is ours, a lack of capacity to communicate this effectively because suppression was normal and has been encouraged to be normal, and you either push it down or you get over it or whatever, and then resentment. So resentment would be what I see erode all relationships, because as soon as there's resentment, there's this little conversation that you have in your head about how that person has done this thing and it's wrong. And as soon as that's there and it's not addressed and it's not expressed and it's not dissolved, well, it's there and it gets etched in harder, and then there becomes more and more and more, and then there's a list. And I would honestly say that that's it.
How much of that resentment would be coming from the disconnected relationship with self?
All of it.
Why?
Because if you're connected with yourself and you've cultivated a skill, I don't like putting the word skill in it because I think it's natural, but you've recultivated or remembered or the natural ability to be with what we feel, and you are able to sit with that and let the feelings just process, regulate yourself. Not just regulate, because regulate can be a form of bypass, but to actually purge them through, let them through. Energetically, they dissolve when you're open to them. They'll move through you. Or sometimes you know, it might need to like cry it out or whatever. So when you have that, it clears the distortion, and you can perhaps be humble enough to inquire, where's my judgment or where's my expectation of making that person wrong for this or responsible for my feeling? And I think they're probably the main two. I can't think of any other. They're wrong for doing that. They shouldn't be doing this, or they're responsible for this. Both make me uncomfortable. When it's external, and when that's cleared, then you can feel it becomes less about that person did that to me, and more about, that's not okay with me, and I can communicate that.
Speak to that a little bit more, because that came across pretty clearly. And I think people listening would go, oh, yep, okay, so I can understand how I have blamed someone else for making me feel frustrated because, well, they did that thing.
Yeah.
But if we understand that that blame is coming from that lack of connection to self and that lack of ability to process the situation and filter that situation and therefore see it what it really is, or step into empathy or something like that, and say, okay, so what they did is out of alignment with my values or against our relationship agreements or whatever it might be, and therefore I'll communicate that as opposed to the blame, the shame, the guilt, the verbal abuse.
There's two parts to that. So one is you're able to actually communicate what your need is, or firstly, what wasn't okay. You're able to set the boundary. But first you have to have a relationship with yourself, be in contact with your own sense of fire and anger. Anger is, we need to be in a healthy relationship with our anger so we can set a boundary. That's what it's for. That, whoa, I feel angry because of that. Use the fire to set a boundary, to ask for what you need, or to walk away from something. Sometimes you need the energy or the courage to walk away. Sometimes you need the fire to break, you know, away. So cultivating that relationship with yourself helps you identify what just isn't okay for you, or isn't right for you, or just not what you, just isn't aligned for you, and that that's your truth, but not necessarily anyone else's truth or responsibility. Unless, of course, you have relationship agreements. An example might be that you, a really classic one is men feeling responsible for their partner's feelings, or like their partner's sadness or their pain or their anger, or like the men feeling this sense of responsibility and wanting to be a good partner or a good man or to do better. But it becomes a burden because it's actually a unhealthy responsibility, because you're not responsible for it. You can be a support, but you are not responsible. And that woman or that partner also needs to be engaged in this relationship of taking responsibility. You need to participate in this awareness and this humility and this mess, which it can be what it is, and it's normal. And so you have this, you know, say you've had this agreement, a woman says, I would love our relationship to be this, this is an agreement. And because the man wants to be,
provider.
The provider, or to honestly move away from his sense of failure or shame, he wholeheartedly 100% says yes to it, but he said it out of unconscious obligation to avoid conflict. He hasn't actually asked himself what he really needs or wants. He probably hasn't felt like he's worth it, or is like a good man just, you know, says yes. And so there's not a full actual commitment there. And then so it'll get to the thing where, you know, it might be always talking to each other about spending a certain amount or doing, you know, a certain thing, like wanting to go to an event or taking on a project, and they don't actually consider, or they don't ask, whatever it is. It could be little things about housework or you know, looking after the children and responsibility. And the man doesn't actually follow through with it because he doesn't know how to lead himself. I know that this is a huge rabbit hole, but it's so deep. And essentially, there's this sense of resentment coming from the woman because there's a cross of the boundary of value. There's a sense of resentment coming from the man or the, you know, the partner, because she's expecting me to be a certain way, and now I'm wrong, and now I've done it wrong, and now I'm a failure, and da da da. When you have a cultivated relationship with yourself, you can also identify both of your needs. You can acknowledge that when this happens, I feel, and it can be communicated like this in a healthy way. All right, when you didn't consider me, when you just made that decision without asking, I felt forgotten. I feel hurt. I feel sad. I feel angry. Usually the woman's going to say that many emotions, and probably more. The man might just say, if it's reversed, if the woman did something outside of their values, they might just say, oh, I feel really disappointed, or I feel frustrated. Usually men will go to frustration. Yeah. I feel frustrated, or I'm pissed.
Yeah. I was going to say there might be a different word for frustration, but that's probably the underlying emotion.
You piss me off. But that's, it's this sense of, the responsibility requires both to understand that someone can have an impact, 100%. Someone's actions has an impact on us, but we're still responsible for what we do with that emotion. Mm. We're still responsible for how we choose to either express that boundary that was crossed, or express a need that we weren't owning, or I have gotten down and apologized to my partner for these micro agreements that I made with him that he didn't know about of how he should be.
Mm.
I didn't even realize I had. He should be like this. It should be like this. It should be like this. That I didn't realize I'd had until, you know, I stopped to go, why am I frustrated with him? Why am I disappointed or whatever's going on? And I realized that I had these expectations that I had made that I hadn't told him about, you know, and apologize for holding him to that, which the energy inside of me, even though I'm loving and compassionate, you know, here, energetically there's this disappointment or this expectation, which is triggering a sense of failure in him and inadequacy and shame. And then that for me is like, you don't go into that. I want you to be strong. And then this is a really common one in relationship. These secret expectations that we have, or these needs that we haven't communicated and expressed, and these feelings that we're not taking responsibility for, that turn into resentment, that turn into disconnection, that turn into, we create these ideas of our partners in our head that we don't like, and then we just play that out, and we project.
So what I'm hearing you say is clarity of who you are, clarity of what you want, and then communication, open communication in that, so it doesn't cause as much of that. But given that you live and breathe this, and you still have created those inner expectations and this bit of tension, it's probably safe to say that most people listening to this have experienced what you're talking about.
Sure.
What can we do for those that are listening going, fuck, I hold a lot of resentment for my partner and I don't want it to get to that point. Like, I do really love them, and I've just realized that's coming from a lot of those, you know, internal expectations or just lack of communication about what we want and need. What can someone do? What's a good first step if they're aware right now and going, fuck, that's me.
For sure.
I hold that resentment.
I think the first thing is to be honest about whether or not their partner wants to have a conversation and honestly get on the same page. You have to first have an honest conversation with yourself. If you would, because a lot of people say, oh, but if I ask my man, or if I suggested that to my woman, they'd roll their eyes, or it would be too hard, and I would be scared that they would feel that it was too much and they're at their edge and they would leave. Okay, there's your answer.
So that's clearly showing where that relationship is heading eventually anyway.
Yeah, and
saying this without judgment, obviously, this is something that you come across all the time, and it's from that place of, there's actually something we can do about it.
Oh, absolutely. And what I've found is when either one just get really, you know, you only need one of you to get really honest with yourself first to begin this, really honest. What is it that I'm not expressing that I need, or what is it that I've expressed that I need that's being agreed to or not being met that I'm still allowing? Mm. So it's like just what is it that I want and need honestly? Have I expressed it? And if I have expressed it, what am I still allowing? And stop blaming them for doing that. You're participating and allowing it. The most powerful position we can be in a relationship, the position that I find we really need to get to within ourselves in order for the relationship to heal and move forward, is own that we've co-created what we've done here, whether consciously or unconsciously. We've co-created where we're at. We're both participating in this 100%. It's not their fault. You're in it. You're still there. You're a participant, a willing one, in fact. So it's not on them. No matter what the thing is that they're doing, you're in it. And yeah, I'm talking about cheating as well. Like, you're still there. You're choosing this. So what is it that you want and need? And are you willing to get to a place of dignity within yourself to own, this is what, like, I know that this is what I want and need in a relationship. And if you don't, that's okay.
Mm.
Like, be free. And I know that that can come with mortgages and three kids and, like, you know, a lot of entanglement. So it's not that easy. And that might, honest conversation might happen with yourself over an extended period of time. But that is the most powerful place to get to. If your partner's open, you can have an honest conversation straight up and say, hey, I've realized I haven't communicated this, or I haven't expressed this need, or this is what I really want. I don't know what the future holds, but can we have a conversation? Because I've realized that we don't even really, what's the purpose of our relationship and what are our agreements here? Can we start from there? Sometimes it's really helpful to have like a professional, someone who knows this to guide.
Mm. Do you think there's a culture of, there's more shame around a relationship ending than the shame of the relationship having tension?
Totally.
And lots of conflict. And it might be obvious from the outside that relationship, its time is done. But there's more shame inside the relationship attached with a separation.
Yeah.
It's So I see a lot of relationships stay together. Like you said, it's the easier thing to do. Easy doesn't mean it's right.
Well, I would argue that it's not easy. I would argue that it is emotionally in the present more comfortable than the perceived unknown.
Mm. So, and unknown of a separation, yeah, and all of the sadness and drama that that might cause.
Yeah, I've said this to a client recently. I was like, are you at a place yet where you can feel the part of you that is more okay with whatever happens than staying with what's currently happening? Are you there yet? They're like, almost.
That's a big realization and a big place, big open opportunity.
Oh, man, it's such a huge thing to, because it's like, oh, it's so, because we, because we've learned to outsource from our parents, outsource a lot of our sense of safety or love or blah, blah, blah in our partners. There's heaps of attachment that has to break away, and it's an uncomfortable process. Mm. Can be.
Yeah. Sorry, I had a question that won't be valid, so I'm just flipping that again now. Anything else on the relationship stuff before we move on from that, that you feel like if there was one thing that you just want to speak to in relationships, because a lot of people listening to this will be in a relationship or they've been in relationships and they've struggled and they want to have a great relationship?
Speak. Like, say it.
Communicate.
Say it. Say it, and to the best of your ability, say it without blaming them and without judging them. Say it. Mm. You've got to start somewhere. Better out than in.
How do we say it without judgment? Like, what's a good space to not be in judgment and not be in blame to step into that conversation?
I guess unequivocally know that you're a participant in whatever is unfolding, even if it's just that you're allowing it.
Allowing it as in the relationship of where it is.
Whatever it's at. That you're not liking, that you're currently judging. So if it's a certain behavior or a certain ignorance.
So that's the responsibility piece as opposed to the blame.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah. So taking responsibility for your participation, even if the participation is staying with the expectation that it's going to change and that it's their fault that you feel this way. It's like, you have a choice. You might not like the choices or the consequences of the choices, but you have a choice. Unless you are locked up in a cage and, like, you know, there's certain circumstances for sure. And I'm saying this with 100% compassion, that if there's like financial dependence, it's a fucking terrifying conversation to have. It's a terrifying conversation to have. And I have full compassion and empathy. And it's a really powerful place if you can admit that you have a role in this, which means that you have a choice in this. And yeah, it's getting to that place where, can you touch the part of you? Can you acknowledge the part of you that's okay with what the unknown might be? Even if there's like 1% of you that's like, I'm getting towards being okay with the unknown rather than this being permanent.
Powerful. Powerful. Can you, just as we shift into, we're going to wrap up shortly, but I'd love to just hear a snapshot of a couple of transformations some of the things that you see. I'm going to speak to this without names or anything, but what I was really blown away with supporting you with the retreat last year was the amount of guys that put their hand up to suicidal tendencies at the beginning, to the amount of clarity and connection to self that they had by the end of it. I walked away from there saying, you guys just saved 3 blokes' lives. And so those kind of things. And then there's other guys in the room that have never had that and never struggled with mental illness, but there's just like those surface level challenges, like you said, like, life's pretty good, but I didn't think it'd be this hard. And why is there relationship tension all of a sudden, at the end realizing, oh, there's my responsibility in that, or there's how I can shift what I'm actually doing and the way that this can play out. Mm-hmm. What are a couple of other key ones that you see with the men or the women?
One of my favorite ones, and just because it's front of mind because it was recent, one of the men shared that he thought, and he was being serious, that there were only like 3 emotions, because that's what was shown by his father. And at the end he came up and he had tears coming down his face. And I mean, like, this guy was rock hard. It was rock hard. Barely said more than three words at a time. And he came up and said, just thank you for, he goes, I don't know what the fuck you just did. Or, you know, there's a bit of profanity in it. But there's this, and he took some time to try and articulate it. It wasn't like really smooth, but he was kind of pointing to his chest. He's like, there's this, just, it's just not there. Like there's this heaviness. It's just, he goes, I feel and I understand what it means to feel. And he stumbled on it. And he's like, well, love. And, you know, and it was like hard for him to get out in a sense, because I guess it was such a vulnerable foreign thing. It had always been an intellectualized concept that was so far away from him. And that was a really special thing, because he has a daughter and a partner, and I know the impact and the ripple through his life. Mm. And, you know, he's texted me since saying, I just wake up and I didn't even realize how much I hated myself. He goes, I wouldn't have been aware if you'd told me. If you'd said to me, do I hate myself? I would have been like, oh, no, I mean, I don't like myself, but I realized that I'd lived with this self-hatred, this self-loathing. Oh, yeah. It was really beautiful. Some of the ones with women I often see leave really abusive relationships that weren't necessarily like they were micro-abusive constantly or neglectful, but they also go on to really honor themselves and who they are as a woman. And in a way, I guess it sounds very cliche, but like, fuck the system, fuck what culture and society want me to do and how to live. I will be the mother I want to be, or the mother it feels right for me to be.
Beautiful.
You know, and I will live in this way, and I will embrace in this way. And if I have to leave all of the current relationships behind that I have, so be it. Mm. I will trust myself. And so it's this strength and this dignity that is so deep within a woman, and you see their power and you're like, no one can fuck with that. Mm. That is what I love to see, where it's like you get this, it's strength without hardness, and that's what's beautiful. And it would be the same with men as well, and it just shows up in a different way. Yeah.
Cool. That's powerful. That's a good way to kind of get a bit of a picture of just a couple of ends of the spectrum. So thank you for sharing that. So we are going to wrap up. And like I said, we'll get you on for 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 over the next however many years. Yeah. But final questions, in alignment with the unbeatable philosophies of living an unbeatable life, is not being immune to the challenges that we've spoken about, or the major adversities, or the trauma. It's actually about developing a life with the skills, the connection, the knowledge, the intuition to be able to handle life's challenges, because they are coming and they will continue to come. So what's one or two key things that you would leave with the listeners to help them live or start to redesign their own unbeatable life?
I would have a non-negotiable block of time in nature where there's no purpose behind it, but you're immersing in it. You're getting in the water. You're taking your feet off, and don't go there with some agenda to get something from it. Be thankful for the fact that you can walk with your two feet on this land and in this water. You give thanks to that land and allow yourself to receive from it, and you give thanks to it. And that's just those two things, those two aspects of it, for hours at a time, and then you'll understand why I've told you. It's something that you're going to have to go, okay, let me just give this a crack, and you'll understand why I've told you. And like a non-negotiable period of time each week. And honestly, like half an hour isn't really enough. So if you need to do a fortnightly 4 hours, make it fortnightly four, because I do believe that that period of time isn't necessary.
Oh. That's a good one. That's a good starting point.
It?
Yeah. One
okay.
or two. Yeah.
All right.
And that goes back to what you were saying there before about relationship to self as well. Uh-huh. So that reconnection to self. Where's the best place for people to follow you online, to jump on, read more about the retreats, about your workshops, about anything that you might be doing now and in the future?
Yep. So I connect with my email list regularly, like once or twice a week. That's, I'd say, the best place to stay up to date, because you can, if you go into my Instagram, Amber, at Amber underscore Hawken, H-A-W-K-E-N, and the link tree there, you can look at which part of the email list you want to jump into. So we update, you know, you only about retreats, or you want to get on the newsletter, whatever.
Oh, cool.
Then you can get the communication that you want to get from us and stay up to date. Otherwise, just follow on socials. I usually am pretty good with announcing most stuff on there. And I say usually because I'm a mum and like I do my best to get it across the board. So,
but announcements aside, you still share not still, but you share a lot of value on there too. You create a lot of videos, a lot of, and I see the engagement from those and how you must change and support so many people's lives just through that content alone, by the information that the comments that I see based under that. So for people, I would highly recommend to follow you just for those reasons as well.
I really appreciate your words, Robbo. Thank you.
Pleasure, as always. Amber, you're a legend. I want to acknowledge you for your relentless passion, but it's that fire without the struggle, relentless passion and drive to live and navigate life from that deeper, more connected perspective. The things that you spoke about that is necessary for our human thrivingness is what you live, but you also still experience the challenges because you're human. So thank you for showing that. But I want to acknowledge you for that deep drive and that deep passion. And that goes into motherhood now as well. And I see that relentless passion for you to be the most present, most connected mother that you can be. It's super inspiring. Keep shining your impactful and abundant light to the world, my girl.
Thank you, Robbo. I love you, my brother. Appreciate it.
Love you, legend. There you go, another empowering episode, and thanks again for tuning in. Make sure you check out the show notes for any extra links or information that we spoke about in this episode. Don't forget you can now catch the Unbeatable You podcast on the YouTube channel, Brett Robbo Coach. If you want info and inspiration straight into your inbox on how to live an unbeatable life, you can sign up to receive weekly insights and actionable steps for optimal performance and thriving in every aspect of your life, plus first release offers on Unbeatable You courses and live events. Don't worry, there's no spam, just short, punchy, value-giving emails straight to you. Simply go to brettrobbo.com/community. If you find value in this podcast, don't forget to share it around with your mates and subscribe, rate, and review. It really supports the podcast mission massively. If you want to reach out to me personally, you can connect with me at Brett Robbo Coach on social media, and that's where you can let me know who you want to hear on the show. Keep thriving, legends, and as always, remember, if not you, then who? If not now, then when? This is your opportunity to live your unbeatable life.